Welcome to Crossroads, a podcast that explores the intersection of faith and Christian living. Crossroads is part of the media ministry at Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church in New York City. Get to know us by visiting us online at fapc.org.
Hi, folks. This is Jamie Staley, Director of Christian Education at Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church. Thank you for joining us for Crossroads Podcast. This fall, we have been talking about faith and leadership as we are headed into an election year. We have been joined by folks to talk about the civil rights movement, as well as other areas where activism and faith have combined. This month, I am excited to talk about one of my favorite Presbyterians, Mr. Fred Rogers, who was a Presbyterian minister. But who also, I hope many of you know, was the creator of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. I'm very excited to have Amy Hollingsworth with me today. She is an author and a speaker and the author of a book that I absolutely love, The Simple Faith of Mr. Rogers. So I am thrilled to have Amy with us this afternoon to talk about Mr. Rogers, his faith, and how that really played into what he did for Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and how he related to children. So thank you so much, Amy, for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you for inviting me, and thank you that you persevered so much to invite me and then came back, I think, a year later.
Yes.
I really appreciate your perseverance, and I knew I had to do this.
Well, you know, we were just chatting right before we started recording, and you mentioned that Mr. Rogers may have had a bit of connection to Fifth Avenue.
Yeah, yes. I recognized the name right away when I got your email, because in one of his letters to me, and I think he was in New York at the time because I think he sent a postcard, he mentioned having attended Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church. And he might have even mentioned like the sermon topic or who was speaking that Sunday. So my guess is that he regularly attended Fifth Avenue when he was in New York.
How fun.
That's a great connection.
That is a very fun connection. A very fun connection. So let's dive right in to Mr. Rogers. I think probably several folks at home, but if they don't know, Fred Rogers was an ordained Presbyterian minister, which is, I feel like, always part of our like proud heritage here as Presbyterians. But his show rarely mentioned religion directly. And in your book, you talk about, you know, his faith and how that played a part. How do you see his faith shaping the values and messages that he conveyed to children?
You know, I absolutely love Mr. Rogers' origin story because I think it's an encouragement to those of us who didn't exactly take a straight path to our callings, because his wasn't a straight path. He was a music major in college, and his expectation after college was that he was going to go to seminary. And I will add that was also his parents' expectation. And he told me that when he was a senior in college, he saw television for the first time.
Mm.
And he said, which changed the trajectory of his life. And he said, the first time I met him, he told me, I got into television because I saw people throwing pies in each other's faces. And he said, that to me was such demeaning behavior. And if anything bothers me, it's one person demeaning another that really makes me mad. His exact words. And so he decided at that time to postpone seminary and to go into television. So he worked in New York on some programs, then moved back to Pittsburgh. And but he still wanted to go to seminary. So he went to seminary on his lunch hour.
Wow.
And it took 8 years to get a seminary degree. But then the Presbyterian Church had a problem, and that is they had a preacher without a pulpit.
Yeah.
So what to do? So what they did is they gave him a special charge as an evangelist to young children and their families to reach them through the mass media. But I think so, which is a really, I'm sure he's the only one in the history of the Presbyterian denomination to get that charge. But I think they still were a little concerned about ordaining him. So they came up with this idea to use his television expertise and do a religious show as an offshoot of the denomination with him as its host. But the funding for that money is like Reverend Rogers before Mr. Rogers. But the funding for that show fell through. And right afterward, he got a call from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation asking him to do a 15-minute program called Mr. Rogers. And when you think about that, you know, that's sort of the, you know, closed door versus open window. If that denominational show had gone forward, it probably would have fizzled pretty quickly, right? Instead, he was on public television for decades. And even recently, Pluto TV has a 24-hour Mr. Rogers Neighborhood channel.
Really?
Because the because the interest in him. And so he was able to communicate his message as a minister through the venue of public television, and we are all eternally grateful for that turn of events.
Yeah. And even today, you know, I mean, my kids, you know, watched Daniel Tiger, the new Daniel Tiger, it's not new anymore, but the newer Daniel Tiger show.
Right.
And that still keeps a lot of the values that Mr. Rogers, you know, put in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. So yeah, it just has continued on. I know that you are first person to interview Mr. Rogers about his faith on television.
Yes, I was the first, and I think I might have been the only one. And that has an interesting story as well.
Yeah.
Because I was working in television at the time, and we had done a children's program, and that corresponded with my 2-year-old son discovering television for the first time. And so I only let him watch Mr. Rogers and Sesame Street. And it amazed me because he was, you know, a tornado of a toddler, which is sort of, you know, assumed, right? So Mr. Rogers really calmed him down. But it never occurred to me to let my son just like watch Mr. Rogers without me, you know, because I needed calming down, too, as a young mother. And so I asked my network, I was like, you know, I think I'd like to do an interview with Mr. Rogers. And they were like, you know, good luck. We've tried for 20 years and he's consistently turned us down. So I reached out to Fred's people and I didn't hear back. And a couple weeks later, I was opening the newspaper and there was an op-ed piece by a man named Don Fetter. Hmm. I always make sure to mention his name. But anyway, the op-ed piece was called "It's a Psycho Babble Day in the Neighborhood." So right away, you know, it's not a fluff piece about Mr. Rogers, but I think he had read like 2 or 3 pages. He was like browsing a bookstore, picked up a Mr. Rogers' new book, read a couple pages, decided he knew what Mr. Rogers was about, and wrote this horrible op-ed piece. So at that point, I had done a lot of research on Mr. Rogers. So I wrote Don Fetter a letter back. And it was a very logical argument. You know, this is what I know about Mr. Rogers. This is where you're wrong. And I think at the very end of it, I did like a shame on you for disparaging someone who's trying to, you know, do something positive for my kids. So I sent the letter to Don Fetter, never heard back from him, but I sent the letter and the op-ed piece to Mr. Rogers' people because I figured, well, they need to know that the bad press is out there, right? So I get a phone call a couple weeks later. Fred has agreed to your interview. I go to Pittsburgh, and it's not till I get to Pittsburgh that I find out that the letter was why he agreed to the interview.
Wow.
Because the letter convinced him that I was sincere enough to be trusted. And that's how our friendship began.
Oh, that's awesome. That is awesome. You first interviewed him, and you were interviewing him about, or you your conversation about his faith. How did that go? I mean, was he open to sharing about that with you?
He was really open. And I think it was, I really think that the letter convinced him that my heart was in the right place, that I was sincere, I would sincerely represent what he said. And it's really interesting because after the interview aired, David Newell, who is his press agent and also played Mr. McFeely on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, he called me and he said, that's the closest anyone has ever gotten to the real Mr. Rogers. So it went really well. And I actually went back a couple years later and did another interview with him. And then, of course, in the intervening years and after the second interview, we kept in constant contact through letters and phone calls and everything like that before he passed away in 2003.
Hey, can you give us a few of the, I guess, maybe highlights of what his process was as far as how he was using his faith to convey these messages to children without overtly putting them in Mr. Rogers? You know, Mr. Rogers really never talks about religion.
Right. What he told me was, he said, every day when I walk in the studio door, I say, dear Lord, let some word that is heard be yours. And then he said, I'm so convinced that the space between the television set and the viewer is holy ground, and what we put on television can, by the Holy Spirit, be translated into what that person needs to hear and see. And without that translation, it's all dross as far as I'm concerned. What's really interesting is that quote about the space between the television set and the viewer's holy ground is quoted, that's used quite a bit. It's in Morgan Neville's documentary about Fred. When the Tom Hanks film came out, some audience got an intro from his wife, Joanne, that used that quote. But I had never heard him explain it to anybody, that the reason it's holy ground is because what we offer is translated by the Holy Spirit. And I think I'm the only one he ever said that to, because I didn't see that come up in any other conversation. And really, it's the missing piece. So if you have that, if you go through your life, whatever your vocation, and say the space between me and the other person is holy ground, and what I offer is translated by the Holy Spirit into what that person needs to hear and see. So if you're a teacher, the space between you and your student is holy ground. If you're a writer, it's the space between you and the reader. And what he said was that he would get letters from people and they'd say, you know, when you said such and such and did such and such in this program, well, that really meant something to me, or it changed my life, or it changed this, or whatever. And he said, I would go back and look at the script, and I hadn't said that at all. But happily, that person got what they needed at that moment.
It almost made me think, with our really modern, newer type of, we are doing some things with hybrid and virtual now in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking about that phrase, when we think about how we relate to those folks who are only seeing us virtually in church too. It's interesting.
Well, I mean, his ministry shows that it can be a very powerful medium if the person, as he was, is really reliant on his prayer life and has something sincere that he has to offer. And that's probably one of the most important things I think that he ever taught me, was that concept that the space between you and another person is holy ground, and why it's holy ground.
I love that. So the clip that I think I've often seen passed or moved around, passed around as much, is that the video clip of Mr. Rogers before the Senate, where he is explaining the importance of public broadcasting. And I have found that clip very moving and spiritual, even though I don't think that I can't remember if he ever mentions anything. He probably doesn't, because he's talking to a bunch of senators. But how do you think, and it doesn't have to be about that clip in particular, but how do you think Mr. Rogers' faith and spiritual values played into his leadership, the way he put himself forward in all these areas?
Well, you know, I think he was, one of the things that I remember Joanne saying about him, his wife Joanne, and she and I became dear friends as well. She said that she wanted people to know that Fred Rogers was not a saint. And she said, because sainthood is not attainable. And so she wanted to know that who Fred Rogers was carefully cultivated. And so one of the most important things to him was prayer. And so he was extremely disciplined. So he'd get up every day at 5 o'clock and pray and read his Bible and have time for reflection. And then he would pray throughout the day, like I told you when he said, the dear Lord, let some word that is heard be yours. So this idea that who he was as a person, as a minister, as a leader, was something that was cultivated, that it wasn't necessarily natural to him, I wouldn't say, because it's not natural to anyone. But even the idea that through our prayer posture, through our reading, through our times of reflection, that we can cultivate the kind of person and leader that we want to be, instead of just saying he was one in a million and there'll never be anyone like him, which that's true. But that doesn't mean there, he would also say there's never been anyone like you, Jamie, or like you, Amy.
Hmm. Oh, that's powerful. So he clearly had so much care for other people, and he spent so much time talking about loving your neighbor on the show, and kind of the worth of every person, which for us feels like, you know, very, very Christian values, very much things that Jesus taught us to do. How do you think those, I guess, influenced him to create this space that really focused on kindness and also emotional intelligence, which I feel like was pretty ahead of the game at that point?
I think you're right about that. And if there is a central biblical theme to Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, it's that. It's to love your neighbor as yourself. And I remember one time Fred was asked to define neighbor, which, as you remember, Jesus was also asked at one point to define neighbor. But Fred's definition was that your neighbor is whoever you happen to be with at the moment, especially if that person is in need. And so right away, like, no loopholes, right? There's no, whoever you're with is your neighbor. There's no loopholes.
Yeah.
And then he said that once you realize that everyone is your neighbor, you have a choice to make. He said, you have a choice whether you're going to be an advocate or an accuser.
Mm.
And this is a powerful thing, especially where we are right now as a country, because everywhere you go, online, in the streets, on television, everyone's accusing everyone else. And so he said, you have a choice. You can be an advocate or an accuser. And this is how he put it. He said, evil would like nothing better than for you to feel awful about who you are. And that would be back there in your mind, and you would look through those eyes and only see what's awful about your neighbor. In fact, look for what's awful about your neighbor. He said, but Jesus would want us to feel as good as possible about God's creation within us. And that would be in our minds, and we'd look through those eyes and only see what's wonderful about our neighbor. And I love that, because I think if at any time we need that reminder that everyone's our neighbor, and that we constantly, every day, in every interaction with every person, we have a choice to make. Are we going to advocate for that person as Jesus did, or are we going to accuse that person as evil does?
So you did bring up a great, you know, in talking about today, and it is election season, although this podcast will come out after the election. But it's still so important, especially after the election. We had an adult education program recently where we invited the hosts of the podcast, Pantsuit Politics, and they spoke a lot about having grace-filled conversations with one another about election season or about the elections. And I just can't help but think of Mr. Rogers in that. Of what do you think modern leaders on any side can learn from Mr. Rogers and how he spoke, how he acted, and what he did in this kind of divisive space?
Well, that's a really interesting question. And I actually which is interesting. So 15 years after I wrote The Simple Faith of Mr. Rogers, which of course is filled with all the wonderful spiritual lessons he taught me and the insights, I had kind of a challenge, or like a rubber meets the road moment, where I was challenged to see how deeply I had internalized the things that he had taught me, because they sound great on paper and they're a great thing to aspire to. But I actually wrote a sequel about the experience. It's to The Simple Faith of Mr. Rogers, and it's called The Curmudgeon Around the Corner.
Oh.
And how my relationship with Mr. Rogers taught me to love my neighbor. And the central question of the book is, could I take what I learned from the world's most beloved neighbor and find a way to love the world's most cantankerous neighbor? And so it was like, it wasn't easy. Like I was saying these things about advocate and accuser, but in my own life, when I met this lonely elderly man who was on his porch, chain smoking cigarettes, in his wheelchair, and I every day when I walked around the block, I would wave at him. And that went on for 2 years. He never waved back. I was like, boy, he's mean, he's grumpy. And so after 2 years of waving, I decided to like say hello, and he tipped his hat. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you know, oh, how long did it take me to realize that he could not see me, right? So this, for about 6 more months, we would just kind of talk from the curb, you know, as I went around the block. And then one day he needed help getting out. He was trying to get out of the house in his wheelchair. So I stopped to meet him. And that's when we finally met. What's funny about it is he did turn out to be grumpy and mean. It's just his not waving at me was not an indication of that. And so the question, that central question, could I use what Fred taught me to find a way to love my neighbor, the world's most cantankerous neighbor? And it wasn't an easy yes to that question. In fact, over the next 3 years, and in hundreds of visits between me and the curmudgeon around the corner, who I describe in the book as Foghorn Leghorn, but with less charm. It was really tested. I mean, it takes a lot of deep searching, a lot of forgiveness, a lot of grace, to really try to understand and accept someone whose beliefs, his whole being is completely different from you. And I was able to do that. I was able to love him and accept him. He was able to love and accept me. And it ended up that after our 3 years of our friendship, that I was with him holding his hand when he took his final breath. And so, but I want to reiterate, it wasn't an easy thing. So I know it's not easy. I know it's easy to say, oh, you need to have grace toward your neighbor, but it's not. It's an extremely difficult thing. But as Fred knew, it was worth the effort and the time to really give your neighbor the benefit of the doubt and really listen, you know, really listen to them.
So we're going to wind down here in a couple minutes, but what, you know, I know you've said that, you know, this book is full of the spiritual insights from Mr. Rogers. Can you share with us just a couple of them that really stuck out to you, or that you found the most helpful? Does that make sense?
Hanks, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood came out a few years back. There was a reporter for a newspaper in the UK who contacted me because the Mr. Rogers Neighborhood did not air in the UK, but there were a lot of Tom Hanks fans who wanted to see the movie. So his question was to me was, how would you distill Mr. Rogers for an audience that did not grow up with him? That's not an easy, gosh, that's not an easy
no.
thing to do. So I had to think really long and hard about like his legacy. And even in conversation with Fred, like when I asked him what he wanted his legacy to be, this is one of the things he mentioned. So what I ended up telling the reporter is that Fred Rogers gave children and their families and their parents permission to have feelings that he gave them permission to feel. And he used to say, whatever is mentionable is manageable. But he didn't put value judgments on emotions. They weren't good or bad, but he knew they could be overwhelming. And so once a child asked him, you know, what do you do with the mad that you feel? And he wrote an entire song in answer to that question. And, you know, what he wanted more than anything was to give children and their parents ways to express their anger that would not hurt them or anyone else. And, you know, I'm saying this to an audience in another country, but, you know, in America, all you have to do is turn on the nightly news to see that we still desperately need these things. We need someone to acknowledge. We all need to acknowledge that we have powerful, overwhelming emotions. And equally, we need healthy, nonviolent ways to communicate those emotions. And so that's what I ended up telling him, because it's like, boy, we still need Mr. Rogers. We still need someone who goes, you know what? I know anger is real. I know you have these overwhelming, powerful emotions, but there's always something you can do to communicate. He wasn't telling you to suppress your anger. He was saying there are ways to communicate how you feel.
Yeah.
That don't hurt you or anyone else. And I'm not sure we've learned that very well in this country.
I watched Mr. Rogers when I was little, and I think probably a lot of people my age and a little bit older watched Mr. Rogers when they were little. And yet here we are as adults with the same problems. So, but I do, so many of those episodes do come back to me. So
maybe there is hope.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's interesting because when I, you know, the child had asked him, you know, what do you do with the magic that you feel? And if you remember, the first thing that I said is one of the first things he told me is why he got into television. And he said, if there's one thing that bothers me, it's one person demeaning another. That really makes me mad. And so he took his own mad, you know, and turned it into, you know, decades of television history by constantly trying to explain to people how to express how they feel without hurting themselves or other people. And so we have that choice too. Like, how do we, he used his mad in a positive way that we are still benefiting from. And so that to me is such a great example of who he was and what was important to him.
Mm.
Well, thank you so much for meeting, chatting with me today, Amy. This has been fantastic. I particularly, you know, just talking about kind of taking those insights and thinking about, are they really manageable? Can we do these? I think is always the trick, because it is nice to hear things, but then being able to put them into practice, I think is so much harder. Just hearing a little bit more about his story, thank you so much for this. I just, at the end of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, he would always remind the children that they make each day special just by being themselves. And I just want to remind folks who are listening that that's still the case, friends. So thank you again, Amy, for joining
me. That's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And thanks, friends at home.
Thank you for listening to Crossroads. Our managing editor is Jamie Staley, and our editors are Vashina Brisbane and Emily Dunlop.